welcome back, everybody. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Rachel.
And every week we watch a formative movie from my childhood and discuss it in the terms of, what, race, equality, gender?
Yeah, and I would say, deeper issues, too, that we come across.
Sure, just whatever pops into our minds.
Yeah.
We kind of just do this thing. It's not very... I don't structure this in any way, really.
Yeah.
And we normally make a sugar-free treat and try that out as well.
Uh-huh.
And altogether, that's a recipe for disaster. So, Rachel, what did you make for us today?
So, this week has been a rough one for me.
Yeah, busy.
Yeah, I was away from home for 3 days because I had to do a camp for the university that I work at for freshmen.
Yeah.
So, I was just like, all I ate pretty much at that camp was romaine lettuce salads because the food was hideous.
Ugh. At least it was romaine.
Yeah, I guess. At least it was an iceberg. There was some nutritional value to it. So I came back really hungry and,
Did they not feed you well, Rachel?
No, they didn't feed anyone well.
Yeah.
But the students didn't seem to mind too much. They didn't complain. They're better than me.
Well, yeah. They just have low standards.
They've all been in Louisiana public schools, so they're like, oh boy, I can have second helpings of chicken nuggets. Bless their hearts. So this week, you may have noticed that I've been partaking in sugar.
Yeah. In our bonus episode, we had Angelo Percato's Italian desserts, which have plenty of sugar in them.
Yeah, and like, I was so hungry and so tired and so desiring of a comfort treat. Then I made cinnamon rolls instead.
Yeah.
Instead of a sugar free, and they're not sugar free. There's sugar in them.
Not sugar free at all.
They're made with white flour, and they're soft and pillowy and beautiful, and I love them.
Yes. Why cinnamon rolls? Out of all the sugary treats that you could have made,
cinnamon rolls are a real. They came like they're a real staple of my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, as much as he. It's so weird. He loves to engage in toxic masculinity. He loves to bake and cook.
And yeah.
I remember a really particular time where he was having a bunch of men over from the church, a bunch of deacons. And I grew up, I've told you all this, but in a very fundamentalist Baptist household. And he made this food that was really, like, we had a buddy who went pheasant hunting and brought us a bunch of pheasants. And he made this amazing these amazing pheasants. Mm. They were so delicious. I mean, sometimes you'd bite into a birdshot. It was totally worth it.
That would be kind of weird to, like, all of a sudden have, like, a hard metal ball in your mouth. Like you could break teeth doing that.
You just have to be careful.
Yeah.
And so I remember it, and I remember being, like, whenever all the people came over, all the men of the church came over, I was like, my dad made this, and it was, and isn't it delicious? And, like, I was real proud of him. And after, he took me aside while they were there, and he's like, don't tell anyone that I cook. He's like, don't tell people that I cook.
Yeah, I've noticed when I talk to your dad that he portrays it as that he grills, and not that he cooks.
Those were cooked, and he cooks all the time.
Or that he bakes. He doesn't talk about that stuff. He just talks about grilling meat, because that's the manly cooking that you can do, is grilling meat outside in nature.
I remember just feeling so hurt, too, by that, because I was, like, proud, and I wanted him to know that I felt proud, and...
Well, plus it's something that you guys both share, that you like to do, and it's something that he's embarrassed of, so that's kind of insulting. Yeah.
And so he used to make... That was... Exactly. And so he used to make cinnamon rolls, and he and I don't get along very well, clearly, and we never really did growing up. And so the only times that we really got along were when we were fishing or when he was baking or cooking with me.
Hmm.
And so he used to make cinnamon rolls, and he was always trying to perfect the recipe because my grandmother made yeast spreads, the same one who made the blackberry dessert that we talked about last week. she used to make these incredible yeast breads, just like, I've never had an angel biscuit as good. I have, I've tried and tried and tried, but they will never, ever reach grandma's.
Yeah.
Never.
Wow. So any tips on, making these cinnamon rolls that, dredge up so many complicated memories?
Yeah. Cooking has so many memories for me.
Yeah, well, for, I think for a lot of people, most cookbooks are, like, basically just, like, stories from people's childhood about why they like this dish or something.
Right, and I honestly think that, and we talked a little bit about this last week, but I honestly think that chefs who draw from childhood and, like, instead of just, like, go to cooking school in France and just jack recipes from, you know, French chefs, and take recipes from their childhood and elevate them into, like, this story about their palate.
Yeah.
Are the best chefs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you've mentioned before that you like, I don't know if you mentioned it on here, but you mentioned to me that you like, chefs that tell a story with mm-hmm. their food.
And a lot of that comes from childhood.
Yeah.
A lot of that. So, I guess my advice is don't be afraid to experiment. These are experimental. They're an enriched dough.
What does that mean?
As far as yeast doughs go, whenever you're eating, like, pizza dough, for instance, which is a yeast dough, you use water and no fat to bind it.
Yeah.
Maybe a little olive oil.
Okay.
But it, you know, it lends it a different texture and a different flavor. It's, like, crispier and a little bit drier,
okay.
Which is good for toppings and stuff.
Yeah.
Cinnamon rolls are the best ones, I believe, are enriched dough, which means that you use milk as the liquid and the binding agent, and use eggs.
Okay.
And so that makes your dough really, like, moist and soft.
Mm.
It is a longer rising time.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed that, I mean, we're recording this after the fact that they've been made because they did take quite a while.
They did.
How long did they have to rise total? It felt like it was maybe like 6 or 7 hours.
So, the initial rise was about 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Okay.
One of my favorite tricks is to let your dough rise in your car.
Gotcha.
Cover it with saran wrap and just put it out in the car, in the hot car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, the perfect temperature.
Yeah.
And it makes your dough, like, really proof. Excuse me. And then the second rise, which is after I punched the dough down and rolled it out and shaped the rolls, was about, well, I put them in the refrigerator to cold ferment. And cold fermentation is something that I've really like come to appreciate, because I like to cold ferment my sauerkraut.
Oh, okay.
I love to ferment things, y'all.
Sauerkraut and cinnamon rolls. Balanced breakfast.
Well, there's nothing more metal than fermentation. There really isn't.
Yeah.
Basically, it's like the bacteria, the same bacteria that consume our bodies when we die,
mm-hmm.
Are the ones that would be, that are consuming, the bacteria and yeasts are the ones that are consuming, like, the food that we're going
to
be eating.
Oh, so you like to eat fermented foods because it confronts your mortality.
Yes.
Nice, yeah.
I don't know about confronts.
Very deep.
I guess.
Maybe you, like, shake your fist in the face of mortality. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's what I like.
You're like, oh, you're going to eat me? I'm going to eat you.
No, I'm more Calvinist in my predilections. I'm just like, death is all around us.
Yeah, it's gonna happen. I've been predestined.
I've been predestined to die.
Yeah. Well, great. Let's finish this up, and then we'll take a break real quick, talk about the movie, and then we'll come back and eat some cinnamon rolls.
Yeah.
Rachel, you're excited about doing the podcast today, about watching this movie?
The only reason I'm excited, and I do this sometimes, is we just watched a piece of media that made me feel positive.
Yeah.
We just watched the first episode of season 6 of Girls. And it just made me, like, cry, remembering, all the beauty that is in the world.
It was a sweet episode.
It was
really sweet, yeah.
It was a good, and it was still complicated, you know? Like, there's a way to make things sweet without making them maudlin, and it did a good job. So that's why I'm excited.
Well, I think that that's going to change pretty quickly, because I know what we're watching today.
I'm going to go quickly back from lover to hater.
Yeah, I'm just glad that, I'm glad you're in this good mood now, so at least you had something today.
Oh, thanks.
But so I wanted to ask you, like, when you think about boyhood media, or even just childhood media, but boyhood media in particular, can you think of, like, some iconic characters that kind of were portrayed as, like, here's what a man is?
Do you mean movies that deal with boyhood or movies that
shaped boyhood more than anything? Like, here's what a man is.
Oh, so what are some examples of masculinity that I can think of that little boys look up to?
But personified as, like, a character.
Interestingly enough, with the kiddos that I worked with whenever I taught middle school for a hot minute, the boys really liked Goku.
Really?
And Superman.
Yeah.
And Batman.
Yeah, for sure.
Black Panther now, which is fantastic. I'm happy.
That's nice.
I'm trying to think. But I guess I should think about the boys in your era.
Sure. I was thinking, like, there's pretty much every Harrison Ford character.
Han
Solo, Indiana Jones.
I was thinking littler boys, I guess.
Well, I mean, I think the littler boys, at least when I was a kid, littler boys were into Han Solo and Indiana Jones also. Sure. But some other characters, I was thinking of, one of them that popped into my head was James Bond.
No, Jordan.
Yes.
No.
We are going to be watching, GoldenEye, starring Pierce Brosnan. Yes. A James Bond movie. I feel like it's important that we...
Pierce Brosnan's a rapist.
Is he?
He hates women.
What? What are you talking about?
I'm pretty sure... Is he the one that it is? No, I'm sorry. Piers Morgan is who I'm thinking about.
I don't know about him either, but... Yeah, I mean, what the hell?
Just a blanket assumption. No, I think you're right. I'm sorry. Please don't sue me. My bad.
I mean, we'll look it up, I guess, and see. But, yeah, I don't know about any kind of allegations against Pierce Brosnan. I mean, it's not something I would be, like, super surprised about.
It's Piers Morgan who I was thinking about.
Okay. Well, we'll look that up, too, because I hadn't heard that. I'm curious.
He has, like, a whole blog. I believe this is the right man. I have face blindness, guys, so sometimes I mix up. I can't tell Mila Kunis, Denise Richards, who's that other one? Jennifer Garner?
Yeah, you don't even know.
And Natalie Portman, they all look like a big blended mass to me. I really can't tell them apart.
Yeah, Rachel once didn't know who Tom Hanks was.
What movie was that?
I don't remember what movie that was, but yeah, it was funny that you're like, who's that?
You're like, that's fucking Tom.
Like, who's that? Steve Zahn? No, it's fucking Tom Hanks.
Steve
what the hell?
Zahn! Something who's like that?
Oh my god. Never, it was moving on. So yeah, we're watching GoldenEye,
no.
Which is a James Bond movie. I feel like it's important because James Bond is portrayed, and in some ways, I don't think it's still portrayed to little, or like marketed to little kids, but when I was growing up, like, James Bond was kind of like a man's man. Like oh, you know, you're going to watch James Bond movies with your dad.
Uh-huh.
It's a very, like, masculine event. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
To see a James Bond movie with your dad, at least in my my childhood. So, like, it's strange because James Bond, the character, is a real misogynist just in every way.
Really fucking hates women.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting that he's kind of put up as, like, this, you know, I don't know, icon of masculinity because he's so very flawed and wrong. And even as a kid, it was really obvious to me.
You know what it is? You know why that masculinity model emerged, I think.
Why?
Men aren't stupid. Like, well, they are, but...
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome. Men aren't stupid. They fucking know... I think they understand the power that women have, particularly with reproduction.
Sure.
That's
definitely been recognized and celebrated in certain societies.
Right. But it's also terrifying. It's like you grow another person in you and then push it out of your pussy, get up, nurse that thing out of your body, and then rear it into another adult that can hunt for the village.
Yeah.
So that's fucking, like...
It's power.
That's like a fucking Cthulhu mythos. Think about if you had a monster, and the a monster from the abyss, and it just like slops out of this fucking hole and has and is growing another version of itself inside of itself.
Yeah.
Then pushes it out of its body, and then picks it up and then nurses it from another appendage on its body.
Yeah.
That's Cthulhu on it. That's terrifyingly.
Horrifying.
That's supernatural shit right there. And so men are probably like, oh shit, we better get this. We gotta lie. We gotta get this shit under control fast.
Yeah, I mean, imagine, so that power is so strong. But if you control that power, then you are strong. Yeah. So that's, I think that's where a lot of oppression of women comes from, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Men are just like... And also, it's just like, oh, shit, they're going to realize and they're going to want stuff that we have. Don't let them have this stuff, because we're big. Yeah. We're big and strong. Just push them down.
So, like, do you remember... Did you watch any James Bond movies as a kid?
I hated James Bond.
Yeah.
My dad didn't really... No, my family didn't want me to... Didn't let me watch that.
I can understand that, and that's actually maybe one of the beneficial side effects of a, like, overly strict Baptist upbringing, I guess, is that you do avoid some of these, like, really negative, what's the word I'm looking for? They're like, I don't want to use the word icon again. They're kind of like sacred cows to the culture,
yeah,
in a way.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like, James Bond has been around, I mean, this is, like, the movie we're going to watch is, like, the 17th one. And there's been, like, 20 or 30 of these movies. Like, not to mention all the books. Like, this is a celebrated character that has not died in, like, 50 years.
Mm.
And he's still the same guy.
Well, they're thinking about making a... Or they are, like, a female James Bond is in production right now. I can just imagine... I can feel the internet screams coming. There, it's like a thunderous cloud in the distance.
Well, I mean, I also, like... At the same time, I mean, I get that, you know, we want to have equality and we want to show women in different roles. But, like, do we want to show, do we want to have, like, Jenny Bond or whatever, who's just a dick to men?
It's Jane Bond.
Or objectifies men? I mean, I guess that would be interesting to watch. But, like...
Other than in pornography? Niche, like, pornography at that?
Yeah, like, we have a negative role model over here. Like, let's take that negative role model and make a female negative role model that's modeled off of it. Like, let's make some positive portrayals of women. Like, we should be eliminating James Bond, not adding another one.
We should have... I want to watch a movie where all the female Bond villains just rise up against James Bond and beat him to death. And then they take over his... Is he in a business? What is he? Is he hired by the government?
Yeah, he works for MI6, which is basically like the CIA for Britain.
Okay. So, and they go, well, no, it turns out even better. It turns out that he was the actual villain, but he thought he was under the delusion that he was the good guy, but he was really the baddies. And then all the female villains beat him to death and throw his body in whatever ocean is next to England, whatever sea.
I mean... That would be really funny. Would they change their names as, like, a way to take back their...
Oh, yeah.
...respect and dignity? Because, I mean, all of these characters are named ridiculous... These female villains are named ridiculous names, like Octopussy and... Pussy Galore. The one in this movie, her name is Xenia on a top. And
I don't get it.
She's on top of you while you're having sex.
Oh.
And because, like, her...
So lazy.
Quote, like, her, like, style or whatever, she's, like, basically an assassin. And she kills people by having sex with them and then, like, crushing them to death with her amazingly strong thighs. while she has sex with them. There's actually a scene in this movie where she like kills this guy while fucking him.
Is it weird that I'm a little turned on right now?
I mean, it is like.
So, I think I want to crush someone with my thighs. I think is the real.
I mean, at the same, like, so as degrading as the female villains are in James Bond movies, it is extraordinarily powerful to be able to kill someone while you're fucking them.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the problem. The problem is that that's the only trope men can think, writers can think of, male writers can think of, is like, because they're terrified of sex. That's another thing men are terrified of, is like women understanding and suddenly want, like, claiming sex and sexual power as their own.
Right.
Which we're moving towards that, and conservative men are like, oh fuck, I have to find the clitoris now. No!
Hurry, it's gonna be around here somewhere.
So quick, get me a book. Oh shit, I threw all my books away because I hate reading.
Damn
fuck.
It, I burned all the sex ed books.
Oh no!
Oh
shit.
But yeah, I'll be interested to talk to you about it after we watch this movie, because Xenia Onatopp is played by Famke Janssen, who you might remember as... What is so funny? What are you laughing at?
I'm laughing. Are you saying, oh no, I burned all the sex ed books. I'm sorry, I'm still on that.
Oh god.
It's the funniest thing.
Well, I'll try abstinence.
Oh wait, I can't.
Wait, that's not reasonable.
Oh no.
But yeah, so... Famke Janssen plays Xenia Onatopp.
Okay.
And she is Jean Grey in the X-Men movies, the ones that were the original ones.
Uh-huh.
That were directed by that kid diddler, Bryan Singer.
God damn that guy.
I know. What the fuck? He makes really good movies, but he like molests kids. That's really screwed up.
I honestly think really good is too much of an endorsement.
He makes really good for... the genre, I guess.
I would say he occasionally hits the nail on the head.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for those that don't know, Bryan Singer is gay. And so when he makes X-Men movies, which are about a group of people that are feared because hated and feared because they're different, he's good at getting that tone across.
Yes.
Because he has that experience. But anyway, what the fuck? Why are we talking about this? Famke Janssen. She plays Xenia Onatopp, and she's sexualized... throughout all of GoldenEye, like
I'm
even
sure
though
she
she's even though she is like portrayed as powerful, she's still there to titillate. And
of course,
we'll talk about that more when we watch it. So we have some specific references.
Oh yeah, and not only that, but James Bond is never sexualized, like ever.
Yeah, in some of the newer movies with Daniel Craig, I know there were some times where he like is. You know, I remember specifically in Casino Royale, he like comes out of a. Like swimming in the ocean, and he's like all ripped and glistening in the sun, and it's very female gazy.
Are you sure? Because that sounds male gazy to me.
Well, he's also very. I think there's a gray area there to where it might be both, because it's also a power fantasy.
But also, I'm thinking about gay men.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
don't exclude our gay brothers and their ding dongs wishes.
No, I don't mean to. I have no experience in. What gay gays is.
Gay gays.
Because I'm not gay, so I can't really say.
Yeah.
I won't speak for our gay brethren out there.
Gay brethren, if you want to chime in, we're all about it.
Yeah. Is Daniel Craig in Casino Royale meant for heterosexual women or homosexual men? Write in. Let us know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's both. Why can't it be both?
I'm just like... in an odd place on the Kinsey scale, I don't find most men attractive, so it's hard for me to say.
Well, Pierce Brosnan is not built the same way as Daniel Craig. He's not, like, very super muscular. I mean, he's fit, and he's in good shape. But he has, like, more of that 90s man Tom Selleck type thing going on.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got a hairy chest.
Ugh.
Swarthy, you know. are you an immigrant? No, just swarthy, huh? Yeah.
Oh man.
We didn't just say that for no reason. There's a Bob's Burgers joke that
it's one of my favorite fucking jokes. I've been asked if I am like what I am on occasion.
Yeah.
What are you?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I am none your business. Get the fuck out of my face.
Yeah. But yeah, Pierce Brosnan had that. I feel like that was big in the 90s with hairy chest was a big thing.
Yeah, I reckon it was.
And the swarthiness, yeah. So Pierce Brosnan's got that, but he's also like, you know, he's British and classy. So he was kind of a heartthrob during this time. Have you seen GoldenEye before?
Maybe.
Do you remember James Bond movies that you have seen?
I saw one from the 70s.
Yeah.
But I didn't see all of it because I hated it.
Was it one of the ones with Sean Connery?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. So this might be a new experience for you.
Yeah. Well, I only made it through like 22 minutes of the other one and was like, I hate this. I'm going to.
Well, one of the reasons I picked this one in particular was, one, this is the first James Bond movie I ever saw. And I've seen a few. I haven't seen much of the ones from the 70s. I've seen all the Pierce Brosnan ones. A couple of the Daniel Craig ones, and then one of the Timothy Dalton ones from way back when.
Yeah.
But, like, this one was the first I ever saw. It's, like, definitive James Bond for me. And also, it was, when I was a kid, the Nintendo 64 game came out.
Oh, I did play that. That game was fun as shit.
And that game was, like, revolutionary for video games at the time. I remember playing that game for days at a time with friends, and just having a blast. It was so different than anything that we had ever had before.
So I hadn't played a video game up until the point that that was the first game I ever played.
Yeah.
But I, you know, played was a rough term. And oh, sure. I was like 13 years old and my friend Alicia had it and we went over to her house and I couldn't do any of the controls. So I just ran around backwards in a circle karate chopping.
Yeah.
And I won. Or I did
that
fine.
That is a legitimate strategy for a GoldenEye multiplayer is to just run around karate chopping people.
No, backwards in a circle.
Run around backwards in a circle karate chopping people.
Because nobody can get behind you.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you're like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, if I remember right, I think that was like in one of the like Prima strategy guides back in the day. Yeah, I'm serious.
Just an accident that I discovered.
Back in the day, we didn't have the internet to figure out how to do things well. You had to buy a fucking book and read.
Oh, yeah. I remember Myst.
Or buy a Game Genie. I don't remember Myst because that game was so fucking hard. I never got past the library in the, like, on the shore. I have no idea. I still, to this day, cannot play Myst. I have no idea what I'm fucking doing. It's so hard.
I love Myst.
Yeah.
I played it the other day while you were in the bathtub.
Did you really? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, enough about my bathtub antics or Rachel's antics while I'm in the bathtub. Do you have expectations about this movie?
I'm sure I'll hate it. Right now I'm fantasizing about playing Myst and listening to black metal.
Why do you think you're going to hate it? And I just to be specific, I know you're going to hate it, but I just want to know.
I think the more interesting thing is addressing Myst and black metal. I'm just kidding.
We'll start a different podcast then.
Oh, you dick. My expectations of this movie is that I'm going to hate it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be bored. I'm going to be pissed off. I'm going to try and carry that sweet, sweet energy from that surfer character in Girls and be like trying to enjoy how comfortable my couch is and sure. How delicious kombucha is.
Yeah, it's so much easier to love than to hate. Just love GoldenEye.
No.
But no, don't, because it's not going to be good.
I mean, that's a really privileged point of view, too, to be like, just love things. Let other things slide off your back. Bitch, what about those mothers in Flint who've been giving their children water with lead in it?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, just let it go.
Yeah, that's easy for you. Go fucking back to Algiers. I don't care.
Love.
Not yeah. Algiers on the West Bank. Algiers is an exotic locale for world travelers.
Yes. Gotcha. I'm positive you're going to hate this movie. One, it's basically an action spy thriller.
Hate so that.
Just that alone, that's a no-no for Rachel as far as genre goes.
You're so boring.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this movie. I think it's going to be fun to be like, look, there's Sean Bean.
Oh, Sean Bean's in this? I'm sure he dies. He dies in every movie.
I think he does die in like every movie that he's in.
Sean Bean beats women, too.
Does he?
Yeah.
I do think I heard that somewhere. I've got to look that up, too. But, man, guys, it's not hard.
I guess I should just say allegedly after everything so I don't ever get sued. Allegedly.
I don't think anybody's going to sue us for something like this.
Libel.
But, Yeah, I mean, this movie has problematic views towards women.
Sure.
The hyper-masculinity is, like, overindulgent and just wrong. Plain wrong. I want to talk about that. That's the main reason I want to watch this movie, so we can talk about some toxic masculinity, because this movie definitely embodies that entire phrase.
I believe it. I believe James Bond is the embodiment of toxic masculinity and maybe one of the worst things that ever happened to the male psyche.
Wow. That's pretty strong.
You know, I don't go middle of the road.
Yeah, I guess not. Well, let's ratchet up the hate. Let's watch some GoldenEye.
Okay.
We'll be right back. Okay, so these look great.
Yeah, these are actually... I do better... Sugar-free desserts are really hard to make look pretty.
Really?
Yeah, because they don't have the structure... They don't have the structure of the sugar. Sugar alcohol is what we usually use, a sugar alcohol, and it doesn't have the same... And also I don't use wheat flour, which...
Oh, right. You know. So did you use wheat flour this time?
Oh, yeah. This is white flour. Okay. This is the worst flour for you.
Yeah. So these cinnamon rolls, not healthy in any way whatsoever.
No.
They don't look healthy in any way.
No.
What is the glaze that you put on there?
So last night, I was looking at recipes. Jordan and I had gone to the grocery store earlier, and I was like, shit, we didn't get powdered sugar. Fuck. And so I started vigorously scouring the internet for cream cheese, because I have plenty of cream cheese. Like, cream cheese icing, no powdered sugar.
Yeah.
And I found this is perfect. It's a cooked cream cheese glaze.
So strange.
Yeah. And there are cooked icings, and they usually have, like, a little bit more stability, but these are, like, really smooth, like, structured glaze. I would say this is pretty... This is a little bit closer to the texture of a commercial glaze.
Okay, yeah.
But it doesn't have all the weird preservatives and stuff in it. It's just, it's not just cream cheese and butter and fucking powdered sugar.
Right, so it doesn't look like a piece of broken glass on top of, like frosted glass on top of a cinnamon roll. It looks like ooey gooey, creamy... glaze.
It was a happy accident. It really shiny. Was.
Yeah, yeah. It looks amazing. Let's bite in because I love cinnamon rolls, and I really want to have one. Oh yeah. Mm. They are so ooey gooey.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So some people are all about a super dense cinnamon roll. But I like mine to be a little airier.
Yeah, I like that too.
A little lighter. So these are exactly what I want. They're light. I mean, I'm going to toot my own horn here. These are really good.
Toot. Yeah, they are really good. I love the... So do most glazes have cream cheese in them?
Yeah, most cinnamon roll glazes have cream cheese.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the recipe or just like the... ratio of different ingredients together, but it does taste like slightly more cheesy, but in like a really delicious way, because it's like, you know, it's a sweet cream cheese.
Yeah, I also think that there's a lot of it on there, and it's also Trader Joe's cream cheese, which for me has a little bit more of like a, because it's like organic and shit, it has a little bit more of a milky cheesy flavor than like a Philadelphia cream cheese.
Okay.
Probably because they are using milk from happier, healthier cows.
Sure, yeah.
That's my dream anyway. It's probably not true.
Yeah, I love the texture of the actual roll itself.
Yeah.
You have an interesting trick for getting the cinnamon rolls all cut.
Oh, yeah. Whenever you're cutting, I think I actually learned this from my friend who's a pastry chef, if I remember correctly. Okay. So when you roll up the cinnamon rolls, the biggest bitch is cutting them with a knife because it smushes them.
Yeah.
And also, like, the knife can drag the sugar out and it can misform them and it can smush them. And it works the dough, like, too much and it can make it a little bit tougher.
Okay.
So what I do is I take a piece of dental floss and I put it under, like, mark where I want to go.
Sure.
I put the piece of dental floss under it and then I overlap the two sides of the dental floss and pull opposite sides.
Yeah.
So it's like a garrote.
Yeah, it like tightens around the cinnamon roll neck.
Yeah, and then just slices it cleanly and evenly.
Yeah, it's cool because it puts pressure on literally all sides at once and cuts through like in a like declining radius circle.
Yes.
It's interesting.
That sounds smart and right.
There you go. Yeah.
Is that some kind of calculus term?
No. It's like if, it basically forms a noose around the the cinnamon roll. And then when you pull...
You said I know, I get it, but you said declining radius circle.
Yeah, like because the dental floss forms a circle. And when you pull on it, it starts to like basically just like shrink that circle into nothing until it cuts through every side of the cinnamon roll.
See, that's metal too.
Yeah, it's neat. It's a neat trick.
If you were to apply calculus to cinnamon rolls, what would you say?
Let me be clear. That is not calculus in any way.
What's I know. That? We're past that. I've moved on.
Oh, I mean, if we were going to apply calculus to cinnamon rolls, there would have to be like some kind of a formula we were trying to figure out and like using derivatives and stuff to to like formulate the rate of change. I guess we could probably like... If we talk about that shrinking circle, there's probably some calculus that could be applied to that.
Some calculus?
Yeah, and like the physics of it. But, yeah, there's not a lot of calculus involved in cinnamon rolls.
I bet there is. I'll bet whenever it talks about the rate of change that the yeast goes through, maybe you could use it with that.
Maybe, but I don't understand yeast enough to even make... any kind of claim.
So this is like us shouting from two opposite ends of a chasm. I'm like, I don't understand calculus, y'all. I haven't taken calculus since college, which has been a hot minute.
Wait, did you just pronounce that chasm?
No, I said chasm.
I could have sworn you said chasm.
I didn't.
I'm going to listen to this later, and I'm going to make fun of you if it's chasm.
There is no way I said chasm.
Okay.
I'm the one who fusses at you about calling banal banal.
Banal. Yeah, it sounds dirtier, for sure.
Which is why you like it.
I guess so.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, wait, before we go. Sometimes we live in New Orleans and Canal Street. Sometimes people block off the C on Canal Street, so it just says Anal Street, and I snicker every time.
Riding up Anal Street. On a streetcar.
It's flooded.
Yeah, these are delicious. I would definitely say these are a delight, isn't quite fair because we use sugar and white flour and everything, but...
I think it's fair because cinnamon rolls are, they are a bitch. Like, any kind of yeast breads are hard to make and they require lots of patience and lots of diligence and different techniques. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and give myself a little hearty pat on the back for these.
Yeah, and you know, I guess, like, people make shitty-tasting, sugary treats all the time, so I shouldn't judge at all.
Mm-mm.
These are an absolute delight, and I love them. I'm going to eat a lot of them today.
Oh, yeah.
Way to go, Rachel.
So there's lots I'm eating right now. Sorry, Kelly. I'll never forget. Lots of dairy in these, so...
Yeah.
That'll be fun for me with you.
Exactly.
I guess we're not going to elaborate on that one. We're both waiting for the other to make a fart joke.
No, I think I was just letting everybody meditate on the fact that I'm going to be farting through this entire episode. So listen carefully. Maybe you'll hear some in the background.
Oh my God.
Because I am lactose intolerant, but I refuse to stop eating dairy.
Yep, this is my life.
Well, anyway, we'll take a break and come right back. Talk about the movie.
Yeah.
So, GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Rachel, what? You had a blurb for the back of a DVD box?
Oh, I wrote it down and bubbled it. Let me find it.
Oh, yeah? You had prepared this. This time you wrote it down in mid-movie, huh?
Yeah. I remembered I had to do it finally after the 15th time or whatever.
So, yeah, what do you think you would put on the back of the box?
Women being restrained and ignored and threatened and demeaned and going to meetings.
Yeah, there's a shit ton of exposition in this movie.
Oh my god.
I was really surprised by how many scenes there were where it's like two characters get together and explain in lengthy detail the plot point that the scene is intending to deliver. There's a lot of telling, very little showing.
Remember at the beginning of this movie, I saw how long it was, and I was like, 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And you were like, these movies are usually like 3 hours. I'm really glad that this is my impression.
Well, not a James Bond movie, but like a blockbuster movie is typically like, you know, 2.5 hours now. Or like almost 3 hours in some cases.
This movie's from the 90s.
I know.
There's no excuse.
Well, that's true, but I just was so grateful that this movie was not 2 hours and 30 or 2 hours and 40. It's only 2 hours and 10. But despite all that, it doesn't need any of that time.
No.
They just constantly tell us what's going on, and then they have some kind of an action scene.
Yeah.
Really, really dull and lazy screenwriting.
Oh, yeah. And whoever was the script editor, fuck you too. Like, there was so much shit in there you knew you needed to cut. But I probably can't blame you. You probably had some producer breathing down the back of your neck being like, look, I don't think they're going to understand it if they don't tell them. And you're like, but... And you're like, no, cut that.
I mean, it is it's a fairly complex... Well, it doesn't have to be a complex plot. They really overcomplicate this shit.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the plot is basically that... There is a splinter faction or like a mafia type organization.
I'm really distracted by this picture of Sean Bean on our screen because it looks like he has a mullet.
It does look like he has a mullet. He looks like, what's Miley Cyrus's dad's name?
Billy Ray.
Yeah, he looks like Billy Ray Cyrus in this picture here from IMDb.
Sorry, back to your point. I just... Had to give us our listeners some context.
No, for sure. What was I talking about again?
The excessive length of this movie and...
All the talking. So like the plot of this movie is that some bad guys steal a Russian space weapon.
Oh, and Splinter Cell and all that.
I mean, there's details in it, but like some bad guys steal a space weapon that shoots an EMP at a city. And they plan to fire it on London to steal some money. That's pretty much the plot of the movie. But they go into a lot of details and try to, like, really overcomplicate things. I mean, there's got to be a reason that these action scenes take place so, you know, things get more complicated just to justify, like, why James Bond is driving a tank down the streets of St. Petersburg.
Fucking justify it, just do it.
Yeah, but I mean, you see what I mean, that they, you know, would want to, you know, pretend there's a good reason for some of these scenes to occur.
Yeah, and you know, when I was a kid, I liked to pretend I was a centaur, and I used to gallop around like an idiot, but, you
but
know.
Nobody filmed that and sold it for millions of dollars.
That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, there's so much talking in this movie, we really were, like, quite bored most of the time, and the action scenes aren't... like amazing enough to really justify like the waiting in between for them to happen.
So many meetings. We have to go to so many meetings.
Yeah.
Y'all, I go to meetings in real life all the time and I hate them. I don't want to do it while I watch a movie.
I will say that these meetings sound a lot more, like the meetings in GoldenEye sound a lot more structured and efficient than the ones that you go to. Like people just take turns talking and they all accept each other's exposition and we move on, next meeting. But in real life it's just everybody talking over each other. And
I have an idea though, look how smart I am.
Yeah, exactly.
Shut up, just give me the information so we can go. And why can't we do this over email?
Exactly.
That's the way I felt about this movie. Why can't we just do this over email?
Yeah, I could probably send you a short email and basically describe the parts of this movie that I enjoy.
Or you could just give me a series of YouTube links of all the stunts.
Yeah.
And the cars chases.
Yeah, they really don't require all that much. The stakes really aren't that high in this movie. Like, in most cases, like, I don't care about what's going on enough. In James Bond movies, James Bond is one of the few people who's, like, consistent between the movies. And none of the other supporting cast that continues on, like M or Moneypenny or Q, are ever in any danger. So it's basically like, okay, here's this woman that he's obviously going to fuck by the end. And, you know, maybe she'll get hurt or die or something like that. Or some people around him that we've never seen before will get shot.
Yeah.
But it really doesn't matter. We have no emotional investment in any of it.
Nope.
And neither does James Bond, because he's a sociopath.
Yeah. He's a total sociopath. That's true. Man.
What are you thinking?
Oh, I mean, I wrote a lot. The weird thing is I thought a lot about global politics with this movie.
Sure. Well, there are a lot of global locations, yeah.
And the funny thing is, I mean, we'll talk about the women. Because I wrote a lot about women and, like, sexual power and sex. I wrote a lot about that. But one of the other things I wrote a lot is Americans, the way that they portrayed, like, each stereotype of Americans and British and Russian is Americans are the members of society that they turned to colonists that were sent away for being too fanatical and defiant.
Yeah, when we broke off from Britain or whatever back in, like, 1776.
It was the fucking purists, and everybody in England was like, oh, man, they're really weird and loud and... like, I don't want to change what we're doing right now. Like, why are they telling us about this crazy vision of Christ? I don't want to do that. Fucking send them to America.
Yeah, exactly.
Let them go over there.
Yeah, they didn't try too hard to get us back after we revolted.
No, they were like, ugh.
One war, really? Well, I guess, 1812.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're kind of like, we want this, but, we've got India. And some... territory in Africa and Southeast Asia.
For sure.
The
American, there's one American character in this, the CIA guy, I think his name's like Jack Wade, and he, he's portrayed as like a rude cowboy who doesn't care for procedure.
Oh, wait, I have a quote for
the lazy.
Yeah. Let's see.
A little goofy and, what do you got?
Oh, the quote that I used that, like, distilled America's ideas.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember. Oh, he was talking to the lady who clearly, like, showed him up on an idea. And she was like, I did this thing in New Zealand. He's like, never been to New Zealand. I'll get on the radio and get the Marines in.
Oh, you know what it was? That scene, so the character is played by Joe Don Baker, who is not a good actor. And I think that the way that scene...
Bite your tongue.
No, there's a reason that he's in like four different MST3K movies. It's because he's in bad movies. He's not a good actor.
He's brilliant. Don't you undermine his genius?
I mean, he's the only one who seems to realize that this movie's ridiculous. Yeah. And so he's like, I'm going to just be ridiculous too.
Right.
But I think the reason that scene didn't work the way it was supposed to is because he's not a good actor. Because I think what was supposed to happen is that she's talking about, like, oh, the Americans have these, like, spy satellites in New Zealand or whatever. And he's trying to say, I've never been to New Zealand, as if, like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, that's classified information. Like, I don't know what you mean. I've never been there before. That kind of thing. But that's how it was supposed to be in the script. But the way he says it, it's just like... it's just as if he's having casual small talk with somebody, like, oh, yeah, I've never been to New Zealand. Well, see you later.
No, I've never been to New Zealand. The way I took it was, like, they're making fun of Americans, because Americans are just, like, we're not known to, like, travel outside of our comfort zone very much.
Or be very aware of the, the entire rest of the earth.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so that's how I took it, was they were making fun of that when he was, like, never been to New Zealand. He's like, I'll get on the radio and send in the Marines. Like, that's how every conflict by the United States government is solved. They're like, oh, fuck you, Germany, or whoever.
I wonder. Maybe that is the interpretation of it. I didn't read it that way, but that is, like, it also achieves this movie's goal of portraying Americans as being the exact way you just described them. So, yeah, maybe. interesting observation.
And they just fucking send in the Marines, who go in there and die a lot and storm beaches and, like, scare the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
And then we're like, okay, cool, guys, you know, go back to your families. We're not going to support your reintegration into society, though. We've got the oil. Yeah. Go back home.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for coming. So what did you think about the way that the other nationalities were portrayed? We've got British and Russians. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Leanne's Cossacks, I guess.
I mean, Cossacks are like Prussians. And, yeah. And another band of Russians. We'll just include them.
Yeah.
Cossacks can just be Russians, too.
Oh, so did you just basically have, like, a strong opinion on how Americans are portrayed, but the others are just kind of, like,
blasé? I mean, I wrote a whole paragraph here.
Oh, wow.
About the way British...
It's almost a whole page.
I know. I got into it.
Yeah.
This one says, British and Americans are so busy patting themselves on the back for being the original Antifas that they forget they took thousands of square feet of land from people who already occupied it and also started the slave trade.
Yeah. I mean, movies like this briefly confront things like the Leanne's Cossacks, where it's like, you know, Pierce Brosnan's like, oh, not our finest hour, where they, like, sent all those people back to Stalin to be executed.
Yeah.
Instead of allowing them to stay after World War II.
But they act like that's such a small crime. And yeah. Two, they don't acknowledge all the other shit. And they're like, but look at Russia! Look at Russia, they invaded Crimea again!
Yeah.
Look at them! It's like, oh, fuck no. Russians were not involved in the slave trade like you were, sirs.
Yeah, we and the British and pretty much most of the Western world, or literally any country, has some balls on them to pretend that they're so self-righteous. Like, yeah. I mean, you know what? Every major world power does it, and it's infuriating because one is good. Everybody sucks.
Well, no one is, like, the hero. I think that's important to recognize. I think I do think that, like, human beings... For the most part, I don't know that there is such a thing as, like, a quote-unquote good person. Like, don't be cruel to people and wash your hands and, you know, take care of people who need a hug. And that's, like, as good as you can get, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, like, you're right. Every single country is like, well, look at us. We're, like, Germany, for instance. Angela Merkel is like... Yes, yes. Look at Trump, though. And then you look at some of the policies that Germans have put into place that are, like, coldly efficient and not caring about humanity very much. And you're like, oh, shit. And also, then you're like, and also the Nazis! We won't let you forget that.
It's true. But I think that it's easier for governments like the British government and the American government to get away with some of the more heinous things that we've done. Because we've done heinous things. I mean,
the heinousest.
We don't, like, murder journalists on a regular basis or anything. But there are, like, terrible things that we do to other people for the most part. And we kind of get away with it because our government systems are so interchangeable as far as the individual peoples involved. Like, senators and the president and all these people. Like, that we kind of have a faceless... government that you can't really pin blame on one person in a lot of cases.
Oh, but people do.
Oh, yeah, we do. But it's seldom 100% agreed upon by, like, a united group of Americans or even outsiders. Like, it's hard to say this is all... it's hard to say, like, the Iraq War was 100% George W. Bush.
Oh,
no,
it wasn't?
There were so many people involved in that thing happening.
I see what you're saying.
And so it's easy to, like, diffuse the blame and just be it's not America that's bad. It's just, you know, some of those people that were involved, some of those faceless people out there in the bureaucracy somewhere, they're part of that. They're the ones that are really causing problems.
And they're the ones who go to white-collar prison while Dick Cheney and George W. Bush paint dogs in their house.
Yeah.
Like... middle management, always to blame.
I mean, this is why we get things like conspiracy theories like deep state, where it's like, oh, you know, we may point to certain people and say, like, oh, they're a part of the deep state.
Right.
But really, the deep state is this completely amorphous blob that no one can define.
Yeah.
And say, like, oh, here's the hierarchy of the deep state, because there isn't one.
Right.
It's just a boogeyman.
Yeah, it's just a distraction.
Yeah.
It's just a distraction. It really is. And I'm not saying that, like, first of all, I love conspiracy theories. So if you guys know some good conspiracy theories movies, message me. I love them. Besides The Manchurian Candidate, which I love.
Yeah.
And JFK, which I fall asleep for 15 minutes in the middle of. But yeah. After that, I love.
Yeah, one of the few three-hour movies that you actually really like.
Oh, I love JFK.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Anyway, so I'm not saying that, like, conspiracy theories are never ever valid or that they're stupid or anything like that. But a lot of them, I think you have to be really careful with them because I do think a lot of them are distractions. Sure. And they're distractions from actual evil that's happening around you, and it's often obvious evil.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's the whole problem. That's the whole reason that we can't accept that, you know, we are just like everyone else, horrible, and we, like, our country and our people take part in some pretty horrible things that still go on to this day. Like, policing in America is not working out very well for most minority groups.
And I mean, like, we're recording this on an iPhone, and Apple uses minerals from mineral mines in Africa where they have little kids working.
Yeah.
So, like, we're part of the problem here.
We're all complicit.
But how can we fix it?
And that's the thing that I really don't know.
Yeah.
Because
we're entwined now.
I mean, I could sit down and really think hard and come up with some ideas to change certain aspects, but to, like, shift the entire course of society, I just don't know.
Yeah.
But speaking of some societal problems, masculinity in James Bond.
Oh, yeah. I wrote a lot of stuff about that.
I think it's no wonder that there are bosses that harass their female employees or people that harass their female coworkers.
Right.
Like, look at James Bond in this movie. Like, he's portrayed as being, like, suave and charming. Yeah, they call it, like, M calls him out as being a sexist and a misogynist.
Yeah.
A sexist, misogynist dinosaur, she calls him. But at the same, and so that's great that there's a character that acknowledges that. But this whole movie completely undermines the weight of that by allowing James Bond to continue to be the way that he is, not learn any lessons, and be constantly rewarded for his misogynist, sexist behavior.
Right.
So,
and, like, don't listen to older matriarchs like M, even though she knows what the fuck she's talking about. Because why would you want to fuck her anyway?
Yeah.
Women are just transactional.
Yeah. There's a reason that they didn't choose, like, a beautiful, sexy woman that James Bond would want to fuck to be the one who's going to reprimand him.
Right.
Yeah. It's pretty insidious. But, I completely understand how little boys and, you know, not even little boys, just men watching this movie would get the sense that it's okay to be, to harass women because it's going to eventually result in, like, you getting laid or some kind of attention.
Just wear her down.
It's okay to scare women.
Yes.
And James Bond, like, straight up drives his car like a maniac with Moneypenny in the passenger seat, just being like, please stop, this is scaring me. And then he, like, pulls a donut into a fucking romantic overlook and pours a bottle of champagne. And she's, like, into it?
Yeah.
Suddenly? Like,
absolutely not.
Guys, women don't like to be terrified.
I think you've said that before.
Yeah.
I think this may be, like, the third or fourth time we've said this.
You know what women really like? Being backed into a corner. That's what they really...
love that.
What the
Please,
fuck?
Please, back me into a corner. Make sure that you make me fear for my life regularly.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
And so, like, these movies... The character of James Bond, the character of Indiana Jones, the character of Han Solo, like, they're all overly aggressive with women, and then they're...
Yeah.
And like, borderline sexually assaulting people.
Yeah.
Where you're basically, like, you know, kissing a woman or groping a woman without consent, and then suddenly the movie portrays it as, like, oh, well, in the middle of it, she decides that she likes it.
Yeah.
Like... That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Like, your dick is not so amazing that you're going to, like, convince some woman, like, mid-sexual assault that she enjoys it. No, that's not how things work.
Even because women aren't a monolith, and I do, like, this could happen, I suppose. It doesn't matter. The point of this is that you don't do it in the first place. It doesn't matter It doesn't matter. I don't care if you're the handsomest guy in the world. I don't care if you have the fucking best dick in the world. I don't give a fuck. Don't do it. Women are humans with autonomy. Don't invade on it unless you are given, like, explicit consent to do so.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to kink shame, because there's some fucking people who are into the kink scene and, like, they like to be dominated and stuff. That's cool, but consent is paramount throughout that process.
Exactly. I just don't... Yeah. I don't even know how this can be portrayed as romantic. I know that, like... It was a frequent thing for a long time and still is a little bit. It's getting less and less where it's like this aggressive type of courtship ritual, I guess is what I'm going to call it. Where, you know, like there's a female, she's not a lead. That's not the case. Supporting character.
Yeah, for the protagonist.
Yeah, I mean, a romantic interest, and basically, like, it starts out that she hates him, but he, like, is trying to get in her pants the entire time.
Wears her down.
And wears her down until she eventually likes him, and, like, that's the way that it works. No.
This is not the way it works.
I just don't know how this got so incredibly popular.
How this idea did?
Yeah, how this trope began and continued for so long without, like, getting change.
I'll tell you how. There are systems in place that prevented this thing from getting change, because men want what they want, and they have grabby, sticky hands, and if they ever got a whiff that their plaything would be taken away, aka a woman, they threw a hissy fit like a child having his fucking toys taken away.
It's true.
And so they were like, no, no, make sure you keep her silent. Make sure that women don't get paid as much. Make sure we undermine their self-esteem so they think we're doing them a favor.
Speaking of, you mentioned something interesting during the title sequence. Because these movies all have unique title sequences with songs that are written just for the movie that normally incorporate the title. And almost all of them involve some kind of like slow motion, guns shooting bullets and women dancing in seductive poses in like a really highly stylized environment that has some kind of a theme related to the movie. And you had mentioned something about, like, how are we supposed to, like, men tell us to be this way, or men tell us to put so much stock into our physical appearance and then get pissed when there's, like, when women don't have something beyond that or no, whatever. What was it that you said?
I said that women have trouble determining their self-worth. Because one of the criticisms that a lot of women get is, she just wants it. Look at her. She wants attention. What an attention whore.
Yeah.
And, like, what in the fuck do you, like...
Like, you told us to dress this way.
Or you told us to act this way. Or you, like, women who are sexy and confident with, who are scantily clad, get male attention. And male attention equates power. Male attention equates, because men have more status, like, of course.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I was just like, yeah. How can you tell us to do something and then get mad at us for telling us to do something?
It's because we don't know what we want at all. Or it depends on the... I mean, people talk about, oh, men are so much more rational. Men are so much more stable.
Donald Trump has convinced me of that.
That is complete bullshit. We are... exactly as erratic as women. Like, we're on our periods.
Maybe a little more.
We're on our periods all the fucking time. All the time. Just, like, yo-yoing back and forth between, like, crazy emotions that we won't... And the reason is because we don't... Like, it's masculine to not share your emotions with everybody. So you've got all these, like, bubbling, boiling emotions inside of you, ping-ponging around in your head. Like, it's driving you crazy. Let it out, guys. Let it out a little
bit. But not in a bad way. Like, take a fucking martial arts class, okay?
Oh, not the anger. Like, not just anger, I mean. Because, okay. Yeah, there's anger, but there's sadness, there's happiness, there's elation. But all of that is, I mean, look at Pierce Brosnan's character. Does he experience any emotions in this movie at all? No. He's shown as being, like, kind of a strong, silent type. He's sarcastic and quippy. But at the same time, like, he obviously has some... pent up rage, even in this movie.
He's an orphan. How is he not traumatized? He is.
Like, that's one of the elements of toxic masculinity that really needs to be eliminated, is that we need to start sharing our emotions with each other, men, it's okay to be sad. It's okay to be happy. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be overjoyed with something that's happened with you, that like be overcome with emotion. Yeah, a lot of times we get frustrated and just turn it into anger.
Yeah. Instead of like taking a step back and taking a deep breath and saying, and I mean, there are women who do this too, but and taking a deep breath and saying, you know, maybe I'm sad about something.
Yeah.
Instead of just like cussing at the dog or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I think that women are so much better at expressing themselves, and oftentimes they're punished for it by men. But like, how do you think that typically, I mean, obviously we're reducing
generalizing
people to two genders here, but how do you think in general women handle emotions as opposed to men?
Well, it depends on the woman, of course. I'm always going to say that because I think it's really important that we don't think about women as a monolith, because women are thought of as monoliths a lot. So,
well, in that case, maybe I'll rephrase my question to say, like, how do you think that a healthy expression of emotion, what do you think that looks like?
I think a healthy expression of emotion is, like, for me, it's easier to think of particular circumstances.
Yeah.
Like, if Bones, our giant dog, vomits on the floor, it's a reasonable response to feel, like, disappointed that you have to clean it up and, like, a little worried about the dog and worried about money at the same time. Like, all that stuff is normal.
Sure.
And that's a lot of emotions to be having.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's just easier to, like, compact it into anger and be like, you fucking dog, fuck you.
Yeah.
Right? But instead, like, take a step away from the puke for a minute and just, like, be like, evaluate, okay, I'm feeling these three things. What can I do to cope with those three things?
Yeah.
Like, Bones, I'll just keep an eye on him. And we know that, and get the vet's number. I know that it'll be fine because we have a vet. And he's pretty healthy. And then be like, okay, I'm going to have to clean it up, but I don't have to do it right this second.
Yeah.
Like, just implement coping mechanisms. And then go look at the bank statement and be like, yeah, we have the money to take care of the dog. It's going to be fine.
Or we don't, and try to figure something out, I guess. But it's okay to...
Holy shit, don't say that.
What? Oh, I don't mean that literally for, like, if this happened to us. But I'm just saying, like, in a situation this.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, like, maybe you don't have the money to handle it. Like.
Right, but I was giving a specific instance about how you're supposed to... like, how that would be a healthy processing of emotions. One, that takes more time.
Yeah.
People get pissed about that. Two, that takes a lot of work. And people don't like that. And dude, I'm not perfect. I don't handle my emotions right all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's so much easier to just scream at something until it's, you know, terrified into submission.
Wow.
I mean,
terrifying.
Well, it is. I mean, look at our current president. He's been I hesitate to say immensely successful, but he has been somewhat financially successful, if not ethically successful, but financially successful through basically shouting people down and bulldozing people in his path.
Yeah.
Like, that's how he became president. That's how he...
That's what he did.
You know, managed to get away with basically stealing a bunch of money from casino investors.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying he stole money from casino investors.
This
is for entertainment purposes only.
Yeah, allegedly. Remember, you have to say allegedly.
Yeah. Well, I don't even think I want to say that, because that's legally dubious. But, yeah,
oh.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes only, and by no means do we believe any of the opinions expressed. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. All that.
Yeah.
Don't come arrest us.
Yeah, anger is so much easier, and it does show to produce results, but I don't think it produces a healthy lifestyle or a healthy personality, really. An attractive personality.
Yeah.
It's something to work on and I still have issues with temper often. It's really easy for me to just, like, blow up instead of, you know, feeling sad or feeling worried.
Yeah. You've gotten so much better, though.
It's like anger is like a negative emotion that I choose to indulge more than the other ones.
Well, you know that there's been psychological studies about how people can get addicted to the feeling of rage.
Really?
Yeah, because it, like, activates your adrenals and your fight or flight and that thrill mechanism that we seek.
It can feel pretty thrilling and, like, righteous sometimes. Yeah,
exactly. So just be careful with it.
Yeah. It's hard to celebrate patience because patience is so much more subtle and overlooked.
Yeah.
It's not something you can, like, look out and be like, oh, look at what a patient person over there. I know. No, you can, like, look at that asshole screaming at that baby. Jesus.
Like, oh, God, he just slapped that pacifier right out of her mouth.
That guy's a doer.
Yeah.
That's a man of action right there.
Right. Let's elect him president.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
No, man. It's true. And I think that the James Bond character is really harmful for men and little boys to see. Because he doesn't process his emotions. Like, there's no processing. He just acts, you know? And, of course, like, a lot of men just act. And a lot of this is him acting on women's bodies.
Yeah. And, you know, he even straight up says in one scene, like, what is it? The supporting character, I think her name's Natalia.
Yeah.
She's, like, being held at gunpoint, and they're like, we'll kill her. And he's like, go ahead. She means nothing to me. And later on, I mean, they get out of it. They get out of that jam.
Right.
And they fuck each other. And she's like, when they had me under the gun, you said that they should shoot me, and you don't care. Is that true? And he's like, yep.
Yeah. It's basically the modern equivalent, or the old equivalent of someone being like, you know, I just want to have fun. I'm not looking for anything too serious.
Like, it's almost portrayed as a virtue. Like, this guy doesn't let himself get tied down to some woman with all of her problems.
That's right.
He's a man.
Yeah.
He can, like, there's so much more. James Bond is so problematic for so much more than just being a sexist and a misogynist.
Yeah.
I don't like to say just a misogynist. Like,
just a misogynist, you know.
A misogynist is plenty to be wrong with you.
Like, sure.
But he has so much more that people don't explore as much. That emotional stuntedness is one of the biggest things, and so harmful, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, I watched this movie when I was, like, 10 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And on a trip to Denver, which was awesome. I watched it in a cabin on a snow-capped mountain.
Too bad you weren't, like, outside.
Well, I did go outside at other times, but there were, you know, you'd get tired playing in the snow. You'd come in and enjoy some hot cocoa in front of the TV, watch a movie. And it was GoldenEye.
All of that sounds great, except for this.
I mean, when you're a kid, this kind of stuff is so cool, and the things that person on screen is doing is so cool. Like, who doesn't want to be the person driving a tank down the street? That sounds awesome. Like, that's made for kids.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Who doesn't want to drive a really cool car really fast?
Yeah, and have women chasing him and fawning after him.
And so, like, they get little kids to think, like, oh, I really want to be this guy. And then they see other things that they don't quite understand, like romantic interactions between two grown adults.
Yeah.
And they see how their hero handles that situation, and they think, well, I want to be like him in these other situations. Maybe I'll try that out, too, the way that he acts that way.
Yeah, I'll just give it a little shot and see how women react. And women have been told, you know, when a man comes after you, it's supposed to be flattering, but he could rape you, so run!
Boy, that's confusing.
Yeah, that's what life is.
Yeah.
You're just like, how do I know which one is going to kill you? Who knows? Roll a d6.
But, I mean, like, it totally makes sense to me that some men, even if they, like, they try out this approach where they're, like, being overly aggressive towards women, and, you know, 99 times out of 100, they get a negative reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can understand them being confused and a little frustrated, and because they're emotionally stunted, very angry.
Yeah.
Because all of the media that they grew up with shows that the woman who's telling you that this is wrong is not the one who's right. There are so many popular movies that made millions of dollars that tell you something different.
And not only that, but a woman doesn't have a right to say no to you if you do this transactional thing for her.
Yeah.
She's essentially a sex machine. You put in your tokens, which are like, I saved her life. I beat up her ex-boyfriend. I brought her flowers. Sex is supposed to come out of the sex machines. You put in your tokens to them. And, like,
exactly.
That's what this portrays, you know? It's insidious.
It is. And you, so while we're on the topic, the female characters in this movie, what are there, three total?
Yeah.
There's Natalia, the computer programmer.
There's M.
Oh, okay, four then. Because I was thinking of the fat Russian woman who's the first to die.
Yeah, she's barely a character.
Yeah, she just exists. Yeah, so M is in one scene, literally one scene with Judi Dench.
Yeah, and Judi Dench is like too good for this. I don't know why she's doing it.
Her scene was incredible.
Yeah, she was great. She was really good.
It was basically just like reprimanding James Bond, which is like, at this point in my life, it feels pretty amazing.
Yeah, where she's just like, fuck you, you're going to do what I say, even though you think that I'm an accountant. Your shit wouldn't get done without my accounting, so get out of here, little boy.
Yeah. And, you know, calling him a sexist, misogynist dinosaur, you're an asshole, blah, 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 blah.
She didn't say you're an asshole.
Well, you know, that's just the tone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, he is an asshole.
But then she also goes all mom on him, too, at the end. She's like, don't die out there.
Come back in one piece. And he's like, you bet.
Why can't women just not be your mommy or your fucker? Like, the one you want to fuck, rather.
Like, even the fucky. Even the woman that hates James Bond really secretly loves him.
She
wants him to come
that's
back.
That's right.
She cares for him.
Nestle against my bosom, James Bond. I'll provide you with plenty of warmth and opportunity.
Yeah, in fact, I think the only people that don't like James Bond die violent deaths.
That's right. That's another thing that's really damaging for men to see. Like, yeah. That just feeds that anger.
If they don't like you, then they're going to die.
They should die.
Or they should die. Yeah.
Everybody can like everybody. It's fine. I want to talk a little bit about how I feel like this movie sort of reeks with the fear of uncontrolled female sexuality.
Yeah, mostly personified in that Xenia Onatopp character.
Onatopp, even by the virtue of her name, she's yeah. on top.
Right.
Heaven forbid!
What a villain.
What a villain. She's on top, and she has, she does kill people by, I don't know if she actually has sex with them, but she, yeah. I don't think she does.
I mean, she very obviously has orgasms when she kills people.
Right.
But I don't know that she's necessarily having intercourse with the people she's killing as much as she's just like squeezing them so tight with her thighs that they suffocate to death.
And she gets a little sex thrill out of that.
Yeah, she also gets a sex thrill out of shooting people in a room.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. But yeah. I think that there's an, like, I was talking to Jordan that there's like a real unbridled kind of fear of women's bodies and the things that we can do with them.
Yeah.
Because it's fucking, if you can convince a person like, orgasms aren't real, then you don't have to work hard at all.
Yeah, again, it's really nice to not have to work hard.
There's so many men out there who are like, particularly of the conservative persuasion, that are out there like wringing their hands being like, oh, fuck. I don't know what a G-spot is. Oh, God. We don't have any sex ed books.
Somebody threw all my sex ed books away.
Fuck.
Oh, fuck. I legislated this out of existence. Now I don't know what to do.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man.
And so that's, you know, it isn't, I mean, that's obviously, like, diminishing a much larger problem.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But if we don't laugh, we'll cry.
Yeah, but so how do you feel about Xenia Onatopp's character? Like, what do you think about a character who's portrayed as getting orgasms from murdering people?
I think that I could...
Good for women? Bad for women?
I think that there are writers who could handle it and make it yeah. awesome.
No, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you fucking kidding? I would pay a lot of money to see a really, like, gonzo, pulpy horror movie about a woman who... kills people and has an orgasm.
Yeah.
When she does it. Like, it's almost under the skinny, sort of. It's like, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I think really my only problem with that character in this movie is that her sexuality that's portrayed is not portrayed as being something for her. It's portrayed as being titillating for the audience.
Right, and for James Bond.
And for James Bond, yeah, in particular.
Yeah, and he, like, they whoop on each other. And there's always something that feels really patronizing to me about these movies whenever James Bond fights women characters. Yeah. And that's that he, like, tries, quote-unquote, tries not to hit her and, like...
Yeah.
Tries to just, like, throw her off of him and is like, be a gentleman, man. But, yeah. You know, whenever you get her at gunpoint, chop her behind the neck and make her unconscious. She hit you first.
Yeah, it's okay. Like, don't hit a woman, but it's okay to, like, tie her to a helicopter that's going down so she gets crushed in between a tree.
Oh, exactly.
Or gets squeezed to death by the harness wedged against a tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. No, what the fuck?
No, yeah.
I actually think that, because, like, one of the things that I think in this movie is that, I mean, this woman is obviously capable of defending herself physically.
Right.
Like, it's not a bullying or sexist thing for a spy who's in mortal danger to punch this woman in the face.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, what was it? Oh, I've been talking about Girls a lot recently, but there was a really great fight scene between a man and a woman in Girls. That,
the show Girls?
Yeah, that wasn't patronizing at all and was, like, very understanding of the female character's power.
Yeah.
In the situation. And whenever there are fight scenes between men and women, like, all you have to do is the exact same thing you would do with a male villain.
Yeah.
Like, acknowledge our power, don't focus on our asses, and just let her be powerful. It's okay even if she loses.
Yeah.
Like, that's how you make it not patronizing. But, like, he throws her around and then, you know, he
slams her against some walls.
Yeah, because she's got her legs wrapped around him and is squeezing him.
Yeah. And he just manages to get free and get the gun and point at her. But, like, I feel like that's a step forward for equality. Not this movie, but I feel like it would be a step forward for equality to have, you know, if you have a capable female villain who is physically intimidating, like, it's okay to have a fight scene, a fist fight scene.
Yeah.
Between different gendered people.
And, like, she doesn't even have to be physically intimidating as long as she's super capable.
Yeah.
Like, there are lots of small women out there who would kick your ass and mine into the next day, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, well-trained, like, martial artists and stuff like that. As long as she's capable. I don't give a fuck. Just make her capable, please.
Yeah.
Please.
See, I think we're kind of on the same page with that character. I mean, what else you got in there? You had something you wanted to bring up?
How does one even play Baccarat?
Oh, yeah. Maybe all British people know how to play Baccarat. I don't know.
Maybe.
But, like, one of the scenes, what is it? He's, like, tailing Xenia on a top or trying to, like, figure out who she is and what she's up to.
Yeah.
And they end up playing this, I guess it's an intense game of Baccarat. I didn't, like, we had no idea what the fuck was going on. They're, like, showing, like, pulling two cards out and looking at them,
yeah,
saying some numbers, and then, like, flipping cards over really ominously.
Yeah.
And it's like, here's a king and a three, and everybody's like, ooh.
And I'm like,
what the fuck? How do you play this game?
Yeah, like, what is happening here?
Man, I mean, I have a gambling problem, but I'm not a seasoned enough gambler to know how to play Baccarat, I guess.
Is that a gambling game?
Yeah, it looks like
it.
They were in a casino, and the chips are those, like, big square plastic things that they have.
Oh, they didn't have the round ones.
Yeah. Like, the big rectangle ones are supposed to be, like, a ton of money. Like, they're probably, like, 100 grand or something like that.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, no way. But this is the income unequal world that we live in. There are people who play Baccarat with $100,000 chips.
Instead of, like,
in Monte Carlo.
Instead of, you know, sending the technology for clean water in fucking West Virginia or whatever. They're fucking playing, they're gambling with hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh my God.
You disgust me! I'm coming for you with my fork and knife.
Oh, you know what else I wanted to mention? Because we did look it up. And you had a funny quote about this, about Sean Bean.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, if you want to. You can tell him if you want to.
Yeah, because Rachel, mid-movie, we looked up whether or not there were any domestic violence allegations against Sean Bean. And Rachel mentioned mid-movie, Sean Bean has a beautiful nose and a heavy hand.
A nice nose,
but a heavy hand.
Yeah,
we looked it up. He does have several allegations of domestic violence. He's been arrested for it a few times.
Yeah, and domestic violence is no laughing matter, but
no. But that was a funny way to put it, that's for sure. But we did look up Piers Morgan, and his was, like, he had an accusation. Like, the worst thing that they have on record that he did was he released a photo of one of his coworkers in a dress that was like high on the leg. And he mentioned something about like, you know, no one's complaining about this view or something like that. Totally inappropriate.
Harassing. A little harassing. Not...
Not the same as assault.
No.
But still, you know, not an okay thing to do.
Yeah, really, let's not. Yeah. So I knew there was something out there.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't think that should give somebody like pariah status. That's like a learning opportunity, you know? Like, don't do that, man.
I think every time an allegation comes out against a white man for misogyny, they just should replace him with a person of color.
Yeah.
There you go.
Man, like, I'd like for something like that to happen, but it never will. Never, ever.
Man, can you imagine how that would make Hollywood so much more diverse?
Oh, yeah.
I've solved the problem.
It'll eventually just happen over time. Yeah. It's just a matter of numbers. There's no way that isn't in our future. That's just the changing demographics of the country right there.
Yeah.
What else you got? Any other thoughts on this movie?
I came up with this theory that female beauty standards in the 90s were just another symptom of white supremacy.
Yeah.
Which is like light skinned, tiny nose, blonde, blue eyed, really tall and thin.
Yeah.
Like Nordic AF.
Oh yeah. And speaking of, I was just thinking while you were saying that, I don't think there is a single person of color in this entire film. This is a huge, not Hollywood movie, but because it's British produced, but a huge international project that has absolutely no people of color. They go to Cuba, and you don't see any it was filmed in Puerto Rico, but you don't see any Cubans in this movie. It's all white people everywhere.
Yeah, white people just running hither and thither.
I didn't see a single black person.
Nope.
I mean, I don't know if you know this, but there are black Americans and black British people. I don't know why there weren't any.
No way. Did you know there's black Cubans, too?
Oh, my
God.
Who knew? What are you talking about?
I know. Oh, my God. I hope there's going to be a black James Bond. I hope that's happening.
There's been a bunch of people who really want Idris Elba to play James Bond.
Yes!
Which I think would be, like, he is the coolest motherfucker ever.
That's a handsome dude.
But then again, like, I really don't want anyone else to play James Bond. He's a flawed character that needs to go away.
How do we come up with original ideas and screenplays, guys?
I know,
and
exactly.
Include like, people of color.
Like, wouldn't it, I mean, I do think it would be super awesome to have Idris Elba in a, like, geopolitical spy thriller as, like, this character that we have, you know, several movies based off of him.
Great. Denzel did a lot of that, too.
Yeah, his is more like bodyguard violence.
That's the way I describe it.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, that one is a spy thriller. He's not, but Denzel is, well, I guess he is in movies like that a lot. Now that I think about it.
Denzel's the best.
Especially around that time. Like, Tony Scott was making some movies that he did that were, in general, a lot like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, Idris Elba, more of that, please.
Yeah, I mean, I just wish that James Bond would be done. There was a chance for it to end a while back because MGM, like, lost the rights. But they, like, fought to get them back, and then they made another Daniel Craig James Bond movie. Like, this character just needs to go away. Mm-hmm. He's a relic.
A dinosaur.
Let's make a new Hollywood blockbuster spy character that is not inherently abusive towards women.
Please.
Like, people complain about, they don't want Idris Elba to be James Bond because he's black and that's not part of the character. Well, I don't know why we're not fighting to make James Bond less of a fucking dick to women.
Also, James Bond is pretend. James Bond can be anything we say he is because we made him the fuck up.
Yeah.
Grow up. You heard me? Grow up.
Oh, my God.
I do want to talk about one more thing.
What do you got?
Is Pam the administrative assistant?
Oh, yeah, in the Cuban satellite center or whatever.
Yeah, she had the blue top and the white skirt.
Yeah, she looks completely out of place. There's all these, like, Russian soldiers all over the place in uniform and, like, all these people in, like, lab coats and stuff. Yeah. And then there's we just named her Pam. We don't. She's not mentioned or anything. She's this woman in the background. Looks like a secretary.
Yeah. Or, she's like an administrative assistant. She's like carrying a clipboard around sometimes. She's not in uniform at all. She looks like she's been there for like 25 years and is like, I've been doing this for 25 years and I really like it. And I bring brownies every Friday and sometimes I put nuts in them, but, you know, Allison's got a son who's got a peanut allergy.
At my previous position, we didn't have quite so many satellites that fired EMP pulses at the London Bank.
Yeah, they're just like, and whenever they started blowing that up, I was like, where's Pam? Someone get Pam out!
Yeah, there's all the center's like exploding and crumbling around them. People are running everywhere, and we were really curious about what happened to Pam.
Yeah.
I hope she didn't get trapped in the rubble. I hope she made it out.
Yeah,
Pam. She seemed like a nice person.
She did. And, like, she was in a few scenes,
she's just doing her job.
You know, she's just like, oh, yeah. Yeah, Edison, I'm taking these to the shredders. Get your own coffee.
Maybe she's Pam from HR, and she's just, like, you know, making sure that she's going around explaining the insurance plan to everybody.
Yeah.
Making sure they understand their co-pays and deductibles and everything.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, well, you can pick from two different plans here, and if you want the family plan, it's unfortunately a little more expensive, but we've got that covered, too.
And, you know, you don't even have to pay any co-pays. Isn't that good?
You're going
to
want that vision. It's only $5 extra.
That's Pam. We were really...
It pays for itself.
You know, and I think that's a symptom of this movie, that I was so bored
that
I had to create Pam, the administrative assistant, to keep me entertained.
It was... I was actually really surprised. I remember liking this movie as a kid a lot. For the action and stuff, but there really wasn't as much action as I remember. Yeah. There was a lot more talking than I remember.
So many meetings.
And maybe it's that I remember the video game more fondly than this, because the video game, you actually get to do things.
Yeah, like run backwards in a circle and karate chop people.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that's always fun. Mm-hmm. It's tried and true.
It's hilarious. This is my last page of notes. We also have to give a shout out for fire safety, because they got on the elevator while the building was on fire. So don't do that.
Yeah, that was a little strange. The little pin grenade goes off and starts a fire, and he immediately runs for the elevator.
We're just like, hey, there's a sign right there that says, in case of fire, use stairs. James.
That was a big risk that James Bond took there.
And then I have... homoerotic written in all caps.
Oh, yeah. When Pierce Brosnan and Sean Bean are fighting on that satellite antenna.
They're like dripping sweat onto each other and their faces are like an inch apart.
Grunting and massaging each other vigorously.
Yeah. I think that's called... They were supposed to be fist fighting, but it was just an inner thigh massage. Yeah,
they really just needed to fucking get it over with. Like, that was what was really going on there.
Yeah. Homoerotic.
Yes, exactly.
And then my last note is that there's, like, we have the cast and crew, like, IMDb up here.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to say, Pierce Brosnan, aging with dignity.
He is. He looks amazing. I gotta say, like, he is a handsome man.
Yeah, his skin looks good. But, of course, like, when you're rich, you can afford all the fucking, like, good food
and people cook it for you in amazing ways that make you want to eat quinoa.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah, it's way different than for us little folk.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think he looks better now than he did even in this movie. Like, he was almost, like, a little too thin for his hair, if you know what I mean. Like, his hair is kind of, like, got that 90s volume to it that's, like, it makes his head look really big compared to the rest of his tiny body. It almost reminded me of the 70s. That was a big thing in the 70s, I think.
Yeah, he looks like a Muppet.
Yeah, and so now he's, like, filled out. He's a little thicker because he's older. And I think it makes him look a little more proportional, which makes him more handsome.
What was the Muppet that, Beaker?
Beaker,
he looks like Beaker. Yeah, he looks like Beaker.
Yeah. I don't know that I would say he looks like Beaker. That's a mean thing to say.
Oh, my God. Are you serious? We just said that Sean Bean has a nice nose but a heavy hand.
Yeah,
and we're worried about Beaker analogies.
Pierce, if you ever listen to this, I apologize for my wife. You're a handsome man and you don't look anything like Beaker.
No, he looks like...
If anything, you look like that eagle. The eagle that is a huge patriot. I can't remember that.
And
that
he, like, teaches... He's a school teacher in a lot of... Yeah. The Muppet movies. He's blue.
Exactly. Yeah, the Blue Eagle.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, he looks like that now, but he looked like Beaker in this film.
No, he did not. So, Rachel, this movie a disaster or a delight?
Oh, fuck this. this movie. I just wanted to get up and do chores instead of watch this movie.
Wow, that's strong. I'm guessing that means disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a disaster, and not just because it is misogynistic and like kind of celebratory of misogyny.
Right.
It also like reinforces some poor male or some poor visions of masculinity with like, you know, keeping your emotions pent up, not caring for other people.
Yeah. Using guns on other people when they displease you.
Yeah, exactly.
Really stop doing that, please.
Yeah, lots of that harm there. But even beyond that, like, the movie is just not very good. It's really poorly written in terms of, like, keeping your attention.
Yeah.
There's some stunts and some visuals that are, like, you know, neat. I would say, like, maybe just average or barely above it.
Yeah.
But they're few and far between.
Yeah.
Not really it wasn't a super interesting movie. I didn't really enjoy myself, and I was happy when it was over.
Me
Disaster.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't watch it. It's not worth it. Find a new male role model for your kids. James Bond is horrible, and he's, you know, he's not the person you want your kid to grow up to be.
Nah, you really don't. Like, the world is changing. They don't need to be crazy masculine to protect a farm from coyotes anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a different world.
We're good.
Yeah.
It's fine now.
We have technology. Technology like this iPhone that we use to record this podcast. Recipe for Disaster.
That's right.
You can rate and review us. And please do. On Apple Podcasts.
Send me some good conspiracy documentaries and movies, guys. Please.
Yeah, if you write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we will read it out loud on the air. And thank you profusely for doing so.
If you send me conspiracy theory movies, I'll watch them.
Oh, and you
That's
know what?
It.
Shout out to our Facebook friend Jonathan who contacted us.
Oh,
this
hi,
week.
Jonathan. Yeah, from. Oh, wait. We excited. Shouldn't say where he's from.
Yeah, excited to. Big Hook fan who's going to be listening to that episode, episode 12.
Jonathan recommended that we watch a movie called Neverland.
Neverland.
Yeah,
yeah,
Neverland.
An independent movie.
It's a Damian Moore movie who did Fag Hag, and it, which is the best like gonzo gay genre you can think of.
Yeah.
And Hook is a leather daddy in Neverland, and I'm gonna watch the fuck out of that.
Yeah. When I was reading the description, I'm like, I have to see this movie. Like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
So we'll
Thanks,
eventually,
Jonathan.
Yeah, when we do, we'll podcast it just for you, Jonathan, and we'll see how interesting it is. I'm excited to watch a movie that actually sounds interesting.
So, yeah,
that'll be fun to watch.
For sure.
I don't know if you've listened to the Hook episode yet, Jonathan, but I already warned you, you're probably not going to like it if you loved Hook. I'm sorry.
Mediocre Spielberg.
Yeah. But anyway, you like Jonathan, can contact us through our Facebook page at Recipe for Disaster Podcast, or you can email us at recipefordisastershow@gmail.com, and we will respond to you. We like to talk to you. We like to hear from you. So please, you know, get in touch with us. We're bored.
Bored.
We're just sitting around watching James Bond all day. It's
no,
lame.
We're not.
I'd rather be answering your emails.
Bored is for stupid people.
Yeah, it's true. But, well, I don't know about that. You can be intelligent and bored. That's a horrible thing
to
say.
No, that's not what I meant. Bored is for people with no imaginations.
I don't think that's true either, because I think that you can choose not to use your imagination and be bored.
Yeah, that's why you're dumb.
It's easier.
That makes you dumb.
That makes you dumb.
That's why I said bored is for dumb people.
Well, okay.
That's actually what my grandmother said.
I hear you.
Shout out to Nana. She did.
Yeah.
Pour one out for Nana.
But yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. Check out our bonus episode that we recorded earlier this week where we reviewed Ready Player One, the worst movie ever made.
That movie.
Yeah. Fuck Steven Spielberg. I'm sick of him. What is he doing?
He's making third acts that drag.
Oh, God, yes.
I wrote him a letter, y'all. I wrote him a letter that said, "Dear Steven, I just rented Ready Player One for $6. Can you please send me a refund?" I sent it to DreamWorks.
We're not going to see a penny of that money.
No.
Yeah. But anyway, thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.